Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. If it please the court, we're here this morning in an FOIA case. As the matter comes before the court, there are 62 pages of documents that are still at issue. We understand from the court's order that the court has obtained the documents that the district court reviewed in camera. Obviously, we're at a disadvantage. I think we're the only ones who haven't seen the documents. The district court, the government, everybody has seen them except us. So we don't know what the documents would show, but we do know some things. And I think the fundamental problem with the district court decision from our perspective is that it displayed an insufficient appreciation for the public interest in disclosure here. And I think that we can start with what everyone agrees is unquestioned, that the purpose of the statute is disclosure, that we start with the presumption in favor of disclosure, and the idea is to open the agency action to public scrutiny. So that's the...
Well, the government argues here, does it not, that one of the problems is that the argument you're making to us is different than the argument you made to the district court with regard to the nature of the public interest?
Well, the government has said that, Your Honor, but that's just simply not true. And we have brought to the court's attention where we argued this below. We argued below that the information, we know that there is information that was originally withheld, subsequently produced, that should have been produced 17 years earlier.
Here's what I'm referring to. In the district court's opinion, the district court writes that the public interest is in knowing whether the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI ignored exculpatory evidence in an attempt to obtain a conviction and a sentence of death. That's what the district court understood, according to the published opinion.
Right, and I think that that's consistent with what we're saying in this court, that there was information that was in the possession of the federal government in 1984, at the time that the federal government was involved in the prosecution of Mr. Bauer as an active participant. There's no question that the federal government participated in the investigation and prosecution of Mr. Bauer. That's a given.
Could I just be clear on that? It was a state prosecution, but there was an assistant U.S. attorney and an FBI agent also involved in the...
Multiple FBI agents and an assistant U.S. attorney. The assistant U.S. attorney took the lead in questioning all of the federal witnesses at trial, who were numerous, and also made the closing argument to the jury on the question of capital punishment, which led to the death sentence. So there was an intimate and FBI Director Webster sent him a letter of commendation for his excellent performance. So we know there was an intimate involvement of the federal government. The federal government has never denied that. That's a given. So
Let me see if we can focus on what the public interest is here. One possible public interest is that the government's that the government files include unrevealed Brady materials, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and for that argument, you've got a problem with the Fifth Circuit's decision, right?
And
our decision in Martin.
Well, I don't think that's the case, Your Honor. First of all, as we said at the beginning, in responding to that argument by the government, the government didn't produce the materials that they produced in response to our second FOIA request until well after the evidentiary hearing in the federal district.
But still before the Fifth Circuit actually dealt with...
The Fifth Circuit dealt with it, and
we... The Fifth Circuit dealt with it, so it had before it all of the information that was in the files that hadn't been revealed at trial.
It had before it the information that was revealed in 2001. It didn't have, of course, the information that has been revealed since, but it had the information that was revealed in 2001. Now, we've made a couple of additional points, Your Honor. Number one, the standard is entirely different. When the case went before the Fifth Circuit is trying to decide whether there's a constitutional violation that was material to Mr. Bauer's conviction or sentence.
Right.
That's not the standard in this court.
What do you do with Martin?
Well, I don't believe that Martin said that the public interest doesn't lie in determining whether the government is fulfilling its obligations under either Brady, Giglio, et cetera, or the FOIA itself. I mean, the way in which the government processes these requests, the way in which the government discloses information that has a possible exculpatory or impeachment value, it's a matter of intense public interest. The Supreme Court has taken it up on more than many occasions.
But isn't the issue here conceding that there's, of course, a public interest of some nature, some kind here, that there's a privacy interest on the other side of the ledger, which you don't have in the Brady circumstance? And given the privacy interest on the other side of the ledger, you have to meet the Favish standard for even getting us into the balance.
Well, Your Honor, I think you're right, but the Favish standard is one that I would suggest that we have met. The language from the Supreme Court was that there has to be evidence that would justify a belief by a reasonable person that government impropriety might have occurred. And I would say that we have that in spades
now,
here.
So is the government impropriety? Let's assume that you're wrong about Martin. You still make the second argument, right, that the impropriety here is that the government has in its files information that might help exonerate a man on death row. That's your other argument, right?
That is correct, Your Honor, although as to that, I have to concede, since I haven't seen what's in their files, I'm not sure what's there, but we have already got some good examples of things that were not disclosed when they should have been.
So how would you articulate this case using the Favish standard? What would you say? How would you make that point?
Well,
in other words, why would a reasonable person believe that? What's the basis for thinking that a reasonable person would believe that government has in its files information that might help exonerate a?
Well, the language of the Supreme Court is that a reasonable person might conclude that government impropriety might have occurred. Now, we already know that it has occurred, so not that it might have occurred. Uh-huh. There's no question that the material that we've described in our brief, which goes to several items of evidence that were used at trial, and I can go through them for the court, were not produced. So
what about evidence beyond the Brady materials? Because my question was based on assuming you're wrong about Martin.
Well, we're at a disadvantage because we don't know what's in the government's files. We know that there are these additional 62 pages of documents.
I'm referring to the part of your brief where you talk about Brady material and information that became available subsequent to trial. That's what I was referring to.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I'm not sure that the information that became available subsequent to trial, among other things, were that witnesses came forward and identified four specific individuals that they believe committed this crime, and they provided the reasons why they believed that. One of them testified that she told another within months of the completion of trial in 1984 that her friends were the ones who committed the crime. So that information also became available, not through the government. That information became available through witnesses who came forward after the trial. So there's a variety of information from a number of different sources, not all of which is the information that the government produced, that has cast significant doubt on the question of whether the right person was convicted here. As we've explained in the brief, and I don't want to bore the court with repetition of things the court already knows, but this is a very unusual case. This is a 36-year-old man with a wife and two daughters, no criminal convictions of any kind, not so much as a speeding ticket, and the claim here is that by the state that he, to steal an ultralight aircraft worth something around the vicinity of $3,000, he killed four people. I mean, it's a very implausible story. And we've just received, in this case, I mean, one of the things that we think bears on the issue before the court today in terms of the public interest, the government keeps dribbling out additional information. I mean, after we filed, this was the third FOIA request to the government. After we filed this litigation, we had productions in February of 09, June of 09, August of 09. They keep giving us a little bit more, a little bit more, and we feel sort of like Oliver Twist coming up with the bowl, saying, can't we please have a little more? And we know that they're, for some reason, still withholding information. One of the things that I would
For some reason is the privacy interest that's on the other side of the ledger. And do you acknowledge, under the precedents, that there are significant privacy interests in not being identified, information about someone being identified from criminal law enforcement files?
One of the things I would urge the court to do, I take your point, and I'm not disagreeing with the point stated at that level of generality, mm-hmm. but I'd urge the court, for example, to look at what was produced under the judgment of the district court. Judge Huvel didn't give us much, but she gave us fewer redactions in three written documents, and she also directed the government to produce four photographs. Those are designated by the government as Roth Bauer 1074, 1080, 1088, and 1123. Look at those four photographs. There is no privacy interest at issue in those four photographs. The government is seeing privacy interests all over the place where they don't exist. And so I think you have an insufficient appreciation, as I said at the outset, for the strength of the public interest here. And there's also these phantom privacy interests.
I don't know. Phantom's a little strong. I mean, there are people. Information about people, the Supreme Court has repeatedly said, that's in law enforcement files is a serious privacy interest. That's in Reporters Committee and subsequent cases of our court, which really gets to the broader point, which is that even with the significant public interest that you're talking about, this is not a great tool for vindicating that, unlike the Brady proceedings, which are designed to vindicate the interest you're talking about and without much concern for privacy, whereas FOIA is quite different.
I'm not disagreeing that there's a difference between FOIA and proceedings in the criminal case. The fact is, however, that the government withheld this information when it should have been produced in the criminal case. So we happen to have found out about some of it.
That was all addressed by the Fifth Circuit, right?
Well, it was addressed by the Fifth Circuit in a way that I don't think is correct, but in any event, there is further information that has been produced since. So we know, which doesn't involve a privacy interest.
About these four?
Not about the four, Your Honor, except the information that we've
three. Gathered. There's only three of them left.
Well, one of them has
right.
died.
Yeah.
The other three are all convicted felons,
right.
And that goes in part to answer Judge Kavanaugh's question. The privacy interest in disclosing that three people are mentioned in government files, for example, our requests go beyond
what
just
those
in, three.
What are they in prison for?
They're in prison for various violent offenses and for distribution of controlled substances.
Yeah, drugs, but not for murders, right? Certainly not for quadruple murders.
Not for quadruple murders, but they're in.
Can't someone be in prison on, say, a drug offense and still have a privacy interest in not having his name associated with an investigation into a quadruple murder?
Well, Your Honor, I think if you look at the declaration.
What do you think about that?
Well, in the case of these people with the nature of the violent conviction, at least two of them have been convicted of felonies with the use of a firearm. Some of them have pled down to distribution of controlled substances in situations where there was violence involved. So, yes, no one has died as a result of the activities leading to those convictions.
Record to the fact that there were newspaper stories identifying these people. I wasn't clear whether the stories were identifying them by name or simply that witnesses had come forward to identify four men who allegedly were responsible for the murders.
The answer to that question is simple, Your Honor. The news stories came about after the witnesses came forward. The witnesses asked that their names and the names of the people that they identified not be revealed publicly. They have been revealed to the courts. the Federal District Court in the Eastern District of Texas, the Fifth Circuit. The courts know their names. The witnesses who have not been identified by name publicly have testified in open court, but their names were not used. So there's no doubt about who these people were. And the reason for the newspaper stories was because of the filings that we made once the witnesses came forward.
Just one question. What is the status of the state habeas proceedings now?
The state habeas proceedings have been stayed pending the DNA testing of various items that were found at the scene of the crime. A part of that testing has occurred at the University of North Texas lab. The University of North Texas has then stated that they are unable to test the remaining items, including a number of hairs, and that those items have recently been transmitted to a private lab for testing. That testing has, as far as I know, either not begun or only just begun.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Counsel for Appley.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, in the court below, the district judge had to make a decision concerning whether or not the privacy interest of individuals had been overcome by evidence submitted by Mr. Roth concerning any public interest, and he failed to do that below. In the court below, Mr. Roth did not show that there had been any misconduct by the government which a reasonable person would believe had occurred. He submitted no evidence concerning what had occurred in the district court. He presented no evidence concerning what information had been given to the counsel for the defendant. He gave no evidence concerning what had been withheld, what had been given. There was no basis at all.
Though, in her opinion, makes it clear she's aware of the timing of when certain information was produced.
Yes, she was, Your Honor. However, that was when information was produced concerning FOIA requests. The affidavit which Mr. Roth presented only presented evidence that there had been information in a FOIA request, and then in a second FOIA request, more information was presented. There was no information in that affidavit concerning whether or not information in the FOIA request had been given to the
defendant. Did the government make that argument in the district court?
We argued in the district court, Your Honor, that
the FOIA plaintiff had not submitted an affidavit stating that this information had not been provided?
We didn't specifically state that he had not submitted an affidavit. We argued that he had presented no evidence at all that the FBI engaged in illegal activity. And the district court so found. She found that he had presented evidence that that FOIA documents were presented in the second FOIA distribution, which were not in the first one. But she found that that is not a violation of Brady or of FOIA because the FBI has no duty to present FOIA information in a FOIA, to present Brady information in a FOIA publication. All they have to do is respond pursuant to the FOIA exemptions.
But here's what the district court said, and she's talking about Favish, and she's talking about Safeguard, and she says, Mr. Roth's allegation that 25 years ago the FBI failed to produce what he and Mr. Brower now believe is exculpatory material based on evidence they have developed since trial is inadequate. And my question is, well, what were they supposed to produce?
They were supposed to produce evidence on which a reasonable person could believe that the FBI had engaged in impropriety. In order to do that, Your Honors, a reasonable person would have to know what the case was about. They would have to know what exculpatory information was given to the defendant, whether or not what Mr. Roth is claiming is exculpatory information was information which was not given to the defendant in the criminal case. And in reading
the district court says But exposing a single garden variety act of misconduct would not serve FOIA's purpose of showing what the government is up to. But that's not what the record showed before her, was it?
No, Your Honor, the record did not show any misconduct, and I don't believe that there was a finding by the court that there was.
Let me understand what you mean by misconduct. Do you mean that the plaintiff would have to show that even though these documents were not produced prior to trial, there were reasonable explanations for it because the FBI was understaffed and they just didn't get around to this particular FOIA request or the Brady request?
No, Your Honor.
I just need to understand what it is that you think Favish required the plaintiff to show that was not shown to the district court.
Favish requires plaintiffs to show that the information in the documents was exculpatory.
In the information in which documents?
The information in the documents that he claims were not submitted to the defense was exculpatory.
So the documents that were disclosed in 2001, are you saying that the district court didn't know what those documents were?
The district court knew what the documents were.
Right.
However, there was no proof that the information in the documents was exculpatory. There was only Mr. Roth's allegation that it was exculpatory.
So I just need to understand what the plaintiff's burden is here. Judge Tatel pointed out, and you agreed, that the government had not argued that there had to be an affidavit from the plaintiff. What did there need to be when you had court records?
Well, the plaintiff in this case did not present any court records. They did not present any of the evidence, of any of the type of evidence that was given to the habeas court. The type of evidence which would be required would be the type of evidence which was developed actually by the habeas court and looked at by the Fifth Circuit.
Showing that there's a Brady violation?
Yes, in order to show that there's a Brady
violation. What if we disagree with the analysis of the Fifth Circuit on whether there was a Brady violation?
I believe that in the first instance, Your Honors, that information was not given to the district court. So we would urge
What information?
The information which was before the Fifth Circuit and which was before the habeas court was not before the district court. They had the testimony of the actual defense counsel who testified concerning what information he had. They had the testimony of witnesses concerning what was before them. They had the ability to look at the entire record to see what the case was about and to make a determination as to whether or not the information in those documents was of the sort which was exculpatory, meaning would it have changed the outcome of this case? And they ruled that it did not.
My question is really just whether we're bound by what the Fifth Circuit said on that issue in applying the Favish standard here. In other words, could we find, well, there's sufficient evidence of wrongdoing and we're not bound necessarily by what the Fifth Circuit said on the ultimate Brady question? That it's a different standard, different purposes, different formulations, and thus we think there's enough here to meet that standard.
Looking at the Martin case, Your Honor, I believe the Martin case says that you would have to follow the Fifth Circuit. We would also posit to you that in your discretion, you should not even consider any of this information because it was not before the district court. The district court did not have an opportunity to And we did not have an opportunity to argue whether or not they had submitted sufficient information that there was a Brady violation because they submitted no evidence at all.
Regardless of what the Fifth Circuit said, you would say we at least have to conclude there's a Brady violation before the standard can be met.
That a reasonable person would believe that there was had been a Brady violation. Yes, Your Honor.
What's your reaction to plaintiff's second alternative basis for arguing that there's government impropriety here, namely his argument that the Justice Department records contain information that could help exonerate a man on death row. That goes beyond Brady. In other words, what he's arguing is that he says, look, this question is based on the assumption that the Fifth Circuit's correct and that we're bound by it under Martin. Okay, so that there's no Brady problem, but Brady doesn't cover post-trial information, right?
That's correct.
And they've got two witnesses, post-trial witnesses, who testified that these murders were committed by these drug dealers from Oklahoma. And, if you combine that evidence with the evidence that was before the Fifth Circuit, that one of the victims was involved in illegal gambling and drugs, Tate, he was involved in that, and that this ammunition wasn't as exotic as the government had claimed. When you put all that together, two post-trial witnesses saying these crimes were committed by someone else, and evidence suggesting that there was drug dealing and that this ammunition wasn't as bad as government. When you look at all that, why isn't that enough to meet the Favish standard and at least require a balancing?
Because, I believe, Your Honor, because Favish requires evidence. All that was...
All it requires is enough for a reasonable person to believe that there might be government misconduct. And in this case, the government misconduct is refusing to release information that could exonerate a man on death row.
However, Your Honor, the mere fact that witnesses come forward and state something does not necessarily mean that it's reliable. For example, there was a finding by the state court. If you'd look at the
let me ask you a question this way, okay? Let's assume that I thought that evidence was sufficient. Would that be a basis for sending it back to the district court to now balance that interest? That is, not the Brady question, but the interest in ensuring revealing that the government has this information in its files against the privacy interests of these three people. Do you agree that if that would be enough to send it back? In other words, our disagreement is only over whether the evidence is sufficient to meet the Favish standard.
Your Honor, I would submit that this court does not have sufficient information to make that determination.
That's why I said we should remand it. That's why I asked why we shouldn't remand it for that reason.
I believe you shouldn't remand it because
should not. Why?
Because the plaintiff had the opportunity to present all this evidence to the district court. None of this is new evidence. He did not present to the district court the statements of the witnesses. He did not present to the district court the testimony of the witnesses. He did not present or allow us to present to the district court the evidence which was the basis for the state court to find that the affidavits of those individuals was unreliable. And we would argue that unreliable testimony should not be sufficient to overcome the privacy interests of third-party individuals.
All right. Anything further?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant.
Just a couple of quick points, Your Honor, because I know time is short. We have set forth in our reply the various places where the government's past failures were called to the attention of the district court. And in answer to Judge Tatel's question, the government never took issue with that. I refer to the court first to the complaint that's in the appendix at 11 and 12, second to our motion for an expedited schedule at page 4, that's a May 30, 2009 pleading. Same point made in our memo in opposition to the government's motion for summary judgment.
And are these citations to the record?
Yes.
Which will show that, what will they show?
They will show that we call to the district court's attention that the information that the government has subsequently produced was never produced back in 1984.
What about the two witnesses?
Yes, we told the district court all about that. Part of the problem in this case is
and
that...
Where is that in the record?
Well, it appears repeatedly, but among other places, our motion in our memorandum in opposition to the government's motion for summary judgment, the Roth Declaration, which is in the appendix at pages 74-75, we explained to the district court that we had to proceed at the 2000 evidentiary hearing in the federal district court in Texas without the material that the government provided. The government never took issue with that. And, you know, none of this makes any sense, Your Honor, because we had submitted to the federal district court in the Eastern District of Texas the entire file of trial counsel, every single piece of paper. There'd be no reason not to give it to the district court.
I know you did. I was only asking about government counsel's argument that you failed to bring to the attention of the district court here the implications of the two post-trial witnesses.
No, we did not fail to do that. And, you know, as some of the questioning suggested, I just want to make very clear that the evidence that was withheld by the government would have been very useful for impeachment. The assistant U.S. attorney stood in front of the jury and said this ammunition that was used in this offense was exotic, rare, never, you know.
No, I think we understand your merits argument. Anything further here?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.